SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three at the races, and last week, of course, back off of the vacation, had expected to get a conversation in with Drew Mollica about the lawsuit that Bill Mott had taken, civil action to try to clear his name and to get changes affected when it came to the way samples are tested. And this all stems from a four-year battle that Drew helped bring to a close. And pleasure always to have Drew Mollica join us. Drew, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. And I got to tell you, it's a great morning in racing. We had a great weekend at Belmont. I was really impressed by the races. I'm sure you covered them. But there was one guy that wasn't there. That would be my client, Bill Mott, youngest member ever to go into the Hall of Fame. We settled our four-year saga in New York with Bill accepting a seven-day suspension. Now, we dropped our lawsuit for violation of civil rights. And the truth of the matter is nobody's ever happy with a settlement. But in this case, we would have gone on for another 4 years, and we believe we would have won. And just to reprise the facts, 4 years ago, New York State Gaming Commission alleged that Bill Mott had a horse return from a race. Saratoga Snacks was the name of the horse, very well-known horse, owned by Bill Parcells. That with a level of Banamine 10 times the amount that a horse could possibly have, and a Lasix overage twice the amount that a horse could have in its system. To say Bill was dumbfounded is to say the least. But in any case, as soon as it came to light, immediately told Bill, I said, Bill, we got to get a split sample. We got to get to the bottom of this. This doesn't make any sense. Filled out paperwork given to us by the Gaming Commission, explicitly said you have a right to an independent test by an independent lab. Now, let me reiterate what I just said. You have a right to an independent test by an independent lab. If you go into the Gaming Commission's history, go to their annual report where they talk about equine drug testing, it says every trainer accused of a violation has the right to an independent test by an independent lab. I didn't say it. Bill Mott didn't say it. They said it. Okay, fast forward because the lawyer gets boring. There is no blood. They have no split sample. There's no way to challenge the evidence. Me, being a dummy, I tell Bill in October or November of 2014, I said, Bill, when we go to the stewards hearing, they're going to throw this out. Got no evidence. Remember, we are in America, right? Last time you looked, America, United States. Okay, go to the hearing. I tell the stewards, I say, Mr. Lewandowski, Mr. Baeza, Mr. Edwards, there's no case here. We have no blood. We can't confirm. We can't challenge. Okay, is that your defense? Yeah, not only is it my defense, it's ridiculous. 15 days, $1,000 fine. Don't let the door hit you in the back on the way out. I say, Bill, I don't, So bottom line is we appeal. Not only do we appeal, we're so upset. Bill is so upset that this ridiculous charge can't be challenged. We take it to the federal court, and we challenge them in federal court for a stay of the administrative hearing, where we have no defense, that they've literally tied our hands behind our back. Judge Feuerstein in the Eastern District of New York is so upset by the facts as we presented them, she stays it for a year. She says to the Attorney General at that initial hearing, how long has the state known it cannot provide an independent test by an independent lab to the accused? To which at that point the Attorney General didn't know. Fast forward. A year later, case gets kicked from federal court, not on the merits, on a technicality. We go to state court. Fast forward again. a Nassau judge doesn't uphold the stay, we do a 11-day hearing where the Lasix charge is thrown out, even at the administrative level, where you got a better chance of hitting lotto. The Lasix charge is thrown out. No basis in science. They uphold the Vanamine charge, and we continue to fight the case. And we get before a judge in Schenectady, Judge Kramer, brilliant jurist, brilliant. And we come to a settlement. All that backstory, Steve, and for your listeners, are to say that we found out during this lawsuit that over a 10-year period from 2004 to 2014, 50% of the accused trainers and owners, because owners are affected too, who requested a split sample in New York, remember, you have a right to an independent test by an independent lab, didn't get one. Did not get one, despite the pronouncements of the Gaming Commission. They've known for 10 years that they don't take enough blood and they weren't providing a split sample. You know what they did? They did nothing. And you know what the Horsemen's Association did under the former administration? They knew about it. Their constituents were being prosecuted. They did nothing. It was only the courage of Bill Mott, who did not participate this weekend, to bring this scandal to light. And again, I believe Bill won the war because split sampling is a reality today at the New York Racing Association because of one man, Bill Mott. Nobody else. Success has many fathers. Failure is an orphan. A lot of people want to take credit for that split sample protocol that's in New York. Bill Mott. His courage, his money, his desire for justice. It's very rare in racing that someone takes a bullet for the game. Bill Mott took a bullet for the game. I'm so proud to be his friend. I'm so proud he's my client. And every horse owner and every horse trainer in New York that races at NYRA owes him a great debt of gratitude. Yes, we absolutely settled the case because of Judge Kramer's deft jurisprudence. But at the end of the day, this had to be brought to light. Do you know, Steve, that for 20 years since the case in New York, DeVoe versus New York State Racing and Wagering Board, where the court said you didn't have to provide a split as long as you don't do it in bad faith. Well, let me ask you this, my good friend. If you know you can't provide something, yet you tell your constituents and your licensees that you can, and you don't do it 50% of the time, I ask you, you don't have to be a lawyer. Is that good faith? It's rhetorical. I won't hold you to it. But at the end of the day, I believe that justice won out and the game is the winner.
Well, and this is an area and a topic that, you know, there's been parallel tracks. Graham Motion in Kentucky, in the same kind of battle designed to improve the way in which, you know, these kinds of administrations are handled. And, you know, everyone, Drew, knew when this whole thing started that it was clearly a, you know, a testing miscue, and it didn't make any sense. And this is one of the areas where, you know, horse players and owners and horsemen find it maddening that there's incidents like this.
Exactly. Let me, again, you know, it's so ridiculous. We're in 2018. They test to a level of picogram, billionths of a, I mean, just minuscule amounts. Now, for the sake of prosecuting, why? Let me ask you this, in the case of Bill Mott, why would the New York Gaming Commission, and why would its predecessor, the New York State Racing and Wagering Board, not embrace a split sample? Why wouldn't they have said 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, we need to ensure not only that our test results are accurate, but that there's a lab quality control, cross control, that the split sample validates that our laboratory is doing its job? The answer was, our lab in New York, infallible. Infallible. That's incomprehensible when you consider the history of laboratories in this country. Don't let me bore this audience, but just go to Google and put in Quantico Criminal Laboratory. Thousands of criminal cases that were investigated by the Quantico FBI lab were thrown out for lab error. Living in Nassau County in New York, and people who live in Suffolk County in New York, know that hundreds, if not thousands, of criminal cases were thrown out due to lab error. Do you think a Major League Baseball player could be suspended for a performance-enhancing drug without a confirmatory test being held from a split sample? Again, a rhetorical question, Steve. The answer is no. The entire Olympic drug scandal was about pilfering the referee sample. How could we, in the greatest racing state in New York, not have a confirmatory test for our lab and think that was due process? And that's what Bill fought against. Most people in racing are worried about getting from Monday to Tuesday. The game is a struggle for 95% of us, whether it be owner, trainer, jockey, agent, broadcaster. This is a hard business. But Bill Mott said this industry cannot tolerate the inability to defend oneself by confronting the evidence. And I'm so proud that he did it, and I'm so proud to have worked for him. But can you believe that this simple issue took 4.5 years of litigation and would have taken 4 more?
No, it's one of the difficulties that everybody deals with when it comes to making that decision about, you know, how much do you spend, how much money do you reach into your own pocket.
Well, it became a cost benefit analysis, but here's what the thing is: we have Horsemen's Association funded by the purse money and the taxpayers of this great state. Now, how could the prior administration, who knew about this, be just told by this administration, well, you're not getting it? Well, why aren't we getting it? Think back into your archives. Remember the Indiana lab at Truesdale? I want to say it's Truesdale. I could be wrong. Where they tested frozen split samples that were never deemed to be invalid, and they cross-referenced them just to cross-check the validity of the lab. And don't you think they found out that there were many positive tests that went uncovered? So the split sample doesn't only protect the horse owner and the horse trainer. It protects the entire industry against lab error. And it doesn't. Lab error doesn't mean a laboratory is bad. Because the last time I looked, we were all human beings, and mistakes happen. Think about yourself, Steve. If SiriusXM pulled your blood today and said, you're loaded with cocaine, you can't stay on the air, and they didn't give you an opportunity to have a segregated sample checked for its validity, would you think you were living in America?
Well, frankly, I don't. I'm not sure that with or without that test, I'm not sure
right.
Well, how to answer that question.
Well, no, but I'm saying, of course you're not loaded with cocaine, but I'm just saying, this case law all over the place. The standard for the destruction of evidence is good faith. If the lab segregates samples and 1 out of 1,000 times it falls through the cracks or all of it's used, that's good faith. You did the best you could, right? I mean, I'm giving you the point. But when half the time you can't provide what you say, is that good faith? That was the genesis of our legal argument. At the end of the day, we ran into a couple of judges who got it. Judge Feirstein got it. Judge Kramer got it. Judge Riley originally in Schenectady got it. We didn't do so good in Nassau where Judge didn't get it. But at the end of the day, very few people do for others when they did it. Bill Mott knew, and we all knew, and you said it earlier in your colloquy, this test made no sense. Let me ask you this logically, and I ask this to the stewards. You, in New York, you must give 3 cc's of Lasix minimum, and you can give up to 10. If Mr. Mott wanted more Lasix, and he only gave 3, the record's clear, why wouldn't you just given it? You know what I mean? You could have got 10. Why would you give 20? It doesn't make any sense. The whole thing didn't make any sense. But at the end of the day, I think the winner in this is every horse person, every horse owner, every horse trainer that races on the NIRA circuit can thank Bill Mott, because Bill Mott made this a reality. And you went to Graham Motion and George Strawbridge and others. When you force the government or the state gaming commission in any state to meet its burden of proof, you protect us all, Steve. Look at what's happening in Pennsylvania. Have you covered that?
Not in its entirety. The harness situation. I know.
There's an allegation that Class 1 medications were administered to certain horses and they weren't called. The truth of that will come out. But the winner in that whole case is the transparency. Transparency is the greatest disinfectant. We must hold our racing commissions to a point where they have to play fair. No one wants impropriety. But the game has to be held on. We hear about integrity so many times. Isn't it a word that you read every day in Pollock on your show, in the Thoroughbred Daily News, and all the mediums? I would say the racing form, but it's not the medium for the news anymore. But integrity, transparency. Where is the integrity when the accused doesn't get a fair shake? And that's not rhetorical. I really would like a response. Is that integrity?
No, of course not. And it's been we've had this discussion over the years with any number of horsemen. I can think about Tony Granitz. You mentioned Indiana. They went after the Tony Granitz. It was preposterous. Tom Amos was able to prove specifically of a contamination in a lab that it was, you know, that was doing other kinds of compounds. You remember the whole controversy on the compound issue, and that, you know, when things like this come to light, it's good for everybody, because it educates, you know, it educates the public who doesn't really know all that much, and it helps owners and horsemen in having at least the attempt to have a playing field. I mean, there's a big debate obviously going on right now regarding the out of competition testing, and you know, the horse players are absolutely starting to beat the drum to get the industry to respond. I mean, we've had our successes, Drew.
Let's go back just to out-of-competition testing. Out-of-competition testing has a mandate in it that there's this isolated split sample. Just not because I'm going to move on with you, because I know I tend to harp. But again, there has to be a cross-check, a cross-reference.
Sure.
There has to be. There just has to be. We can't let that. We were. Do you know, by the way, of the 30-some-odd states that have thoroughbred racing and harness racing paramutually, we were the only one that didn't mandate an independent test. Now, why would that be? Why would that be? That makes no sense. Of course, the answer was, we don't have to do it. We're in New York. Well, no, we are not. We operate under the Constitution of the United States of America and the Constitution of the State of New York. Due process can't leave the building. But back to what you said about contamination and things like that. Frank Kirby, I don't know if you know Frank. I've known him 40 years, more. I was at Balmoral Park in Crete, Illinois. In the early 80s, I ran into Frank Kirby. I mean, a great guy. Never had a positive test. Illinois gave him a year for supposedly having methamphetamine in a 4,000 claimer in the last race at Hawthorne on like a December afternoon. Frank Kirby wouldn't know methamphetamine if it hit him in the head or it came delivered to his house by FedEx. I mean, common sense has to enter the equation, does it not?
Yep.
I mean, again, no one wants to put methamphetamine in a thoroughbred racehorse. For the God's sakes, it was the root of killing my dearest friend and one of the greatest riders that ever lived, Chris Antley. Methamphetamine is poison. It's made from junk and chemicals. We know that it's bad. But I also know in my soul, and I don't know the case, and Frank didn't retain me, he didn't do it. He did not do it. And then you have levels, the threshold levels of certain medications that have no predicate in science, that have no... The standard to use science against an accused is, in New York, it's called the Fry standard, where to have an expert pontificate on what a drug does, that pontification by the expert has to be published science, peer-reviewed, and widely accepted by the scientific community as valid. Until we get science that meets that standard, that gaming commissions all over the country accept, then we're kidding ourselves. You remember the Todd Pletcher debate over the Delaware handicap, what was it, 3 years ago now?
Yep.
John Wayne, who's by no means liberal on such matters, made a statement. We can't meet our burden of proof because there's no science behind this violation. Hello? Is anybody listening out there? And then I read from the counsel for Arce. They say, well, John Wayne was wrong. We would have had it. That's astonishing to me. That's astonishing to me. And again, I know these topics are not as hot as how brilliant the Belmont Oaks was, or how brilliant the Belmont Derby was, or how great the Belmont Sprint was. But these issues, Steve, are part of the equation. We're only going to grow as an industry if we have transparency and truth and shed some light on these dark areas that trouble us all.
Agreed. Agreed. And, you know, we touch on it on a regular basis. We've had for years the visits with RMTC for, you know, at every angle, the ongoing work toward unifying standards and lab.
Well, it's the ongoing debate between federal and state litigation. Some want USADA, yep. Others don't. I think the debate is open. States don't want to give up control. We got it, right? People yep. work, they do this, they don't want to give up control. Some say federal intervention real bad. My dear friend, Terry Finley, is a Hay Oats and Water guy. I have others that believe in it. Mr. Janney, you know, a firm believer in it. Again, I leave my options open. Not that anybody gives a care what I think, but I leave my options open. But I will say this. We got to do something. We have to, as an industry, do something to address these issues. We have to. And whether it's federal intervention, I don't know. I don't know what's right or wrong. But I do know this, and horsemen's associations have great strength if they'll use it. This idea that you can negotiate with a tiger when the tiger has its head in your mouth, that's Churchill's quote, not mine, is ridiculous. We have to use our strength as an industry to make things happen. George Strawbridge and Graham Motion, Bill Mott, Tom Amos, list five or six more that had to fight the fight on their own? No, sir. I believe that the Bill Mott fight for split sampling was not only exposure of the failures of the system at the commission, it was the failure of the previous Horstmann's administration to have identified this problem and used the strength of that organization to literally force this commission to play fair. And that strength is in numbers. I was just reading the Pollack Report, and I clicked down, and I saw where John Gosden did an interview with Nick Luck about his years in the United States. And do you know that he and Bobby Frankel led a three-day strike in California 30 years ago during an immigration raid? And changed the way immigration dealt with the backstretch of Del Mar and Santa Anita. I had no idea that this happened. But they led a three-day strike that made the Sacramento, the capital, rethink their immigration policy and force the feds to bring in the H-2B visa. Now, I had never known that. But I'll tell you what it did prove. It proves there's strength in numbers. John Gosden and Bobby Frankel, 30 years ago, maybe 35, changed the face of the way they did business. And we, too, as an industry, Steve, can do that, but only with the strength in numbers. Because isolated, when you fight on your own, how much do you think 4 years of litigation costs Bill Mott, even at my low rates? You know?
Drew Malika, everybody.
No, I mean, I'm serious.
That's great.
Mean, I love him like family,
I love it.
But you can't fight in federal court, three state courts, do 11 days.
It takes a motion. It takes that level of accomplishment to make these statements and affect lasting, impactful change.
Right, Drew? And I saw that Graham Motion went over to... Hay, oats, and water. Again, everybody's allowed an opinion. As an industry, we cannot allow voodoo science. We cannot allow on transparency. We must have a cross-reference against the laboratory. That makes us all better. You want to spend $1 million on a yearling and win a race or win a stake or win anything and then be told there's a trace of glaucine in the horse's system, glaucine, something I'm fighting right now. A known contaminant. Should you lose that purse? Should you? I mean, we're testing to a level that is so sophisticated. The last time you went into any barn, did you see it as a sterile environment?
No,
now,
of
that's
course not.
Rhetorical. You
no,
know?
Exactly. Exactly.
So if you're going to test to that level, you have to put in factors. And again, the response against that is BS. Hey, Otsu, nothing. Well, nothing's not a possibility, Steve.
It's not practical, exactly.
You know, and I appreciate the opportunity to say this to your audience, because if they're listening to you, they know the game, you know? And people who know the game have to understand, we on the defense side of the bar, Joe Feraldo, Chris Widstruck, Daryl Vienna, Alan Pinkus, The list, it's not a big list, but it's a list of people that want to change the game. Joe Feraldo, 50 years ago, it's 50 years ago now, that he won the battle in the U.S. Supreme Court in Barry versus Barchi that forced due process on gaming commissions. Prior to that Supreme Court decision, your license was a privilege. They could pull it just because they didn't like you. Well, that can't happen anymore. And do you know when he fought that fight? That no one was behind them. Him and John Barchi fought that fight alone. Joe Feraldo should get whatever the equivalent of the American Medal of Freedom is, because gaming commissions have been ruining the day that he won that decision for 50 years. You know, but anyway, the truth of the matter is you do a great service by promoting the game, and I think we all want fairness, but it can't be fair when you hide the ball or stack the deck.
Agreed, Doug. And I appreciate Drew the chance to let you explain what went on here and Bill Mott's commitment to getting things change. And we appreciate it.
No, I appreciate the opportunity to be on. And again, the justice system is so tough. And again. My mother, rest her soul, used to say, you can't fight City Hall. Well, the reason you can't fight it is because it costs a lot of money. You know? And what does government have? Time and money. We would have ended up in the Court of Appeals, because when we won, the Gaming Commission was going to appeal. And God forbid we lost, which I don't believe we would have, they would have appealed. And then we would have gone up and gone up and gone up and gone up. So at the end of the day, Bill took his days. It took 7 days. But the winner is the industry. And again, everybody knows Bill Mott's contribution to racing. This was his shining hour. And I said it in the Blood Horse. I want to say it again. Because he didn't do this for him. Racing, as you know, Steve, is a pretty selfish game. I win, you lose. You know? Yep. Bill said, nobody should go through what I go through. Nobody. And that's where we are. And I'm just so, every once in a while in life, you get to meet a person that special and to get on a task that I feel is that special. The task is to make the game better. And the only way to make the game better is to hold everybody accountable, horsemen included, by the way.
Sure.
You know, So I appreciate that. And pretty soon you'll be at Saratoga, right?
I'm already here. I'm home at Greenwich and waiting for everybody to come up a week from Friday. So we'll see you here soon.
It is the epicenter of great racing, and I appreciate the time. And good luck to you, Steve. You're a good man.
Drew, I appreciate you doing this. Drew Malika, everybody. And Drew, who has one of the most amazing stories, the years as a jock agent, most famously with Chris Antley and Rich Migliori, his two riders that had just countless wins and success at the highest level, and then decided he wanted to make a career change, and he went to law school, and he didn't necessarily expect to practice on and around the racetrack, but is available for all, and an amazing, really a fascinating guy. Happy to welcome Doug Anderson before we get done with this Monday get-together, because the weekend was well underway. Hell, it was a holiday week. So, you know, we had the July 4th racing and then the Iowa Festival of Racing. And when Bob Nastanovich was with us, we talked about Doug and the kind of meet he's having at Prairie Meadows, and to then turn around and win the Cornhusker. No matter what happens now, Doug, the rest of the meet, you got to figure your summer is made. Congratulations to you and Mr. Adams and Alex Berzer and to Remembering Rita.
Oh, we appreciate it very much. You know, it's just been a joy and everything, a thrill to win that. It's kind of home race from Nebraska and everything. So, I mean, it was just a great thrill.
Doug, talk about the horse, because this is a late-developing four-year-old by Spring at Last, the horse that was claimed for 50. I mean, so there was an expectation that there was something to him, you know, even as a maiden. And you then had to have him sidelined for a year. Tell the story that got you to this point.
Well, excuse me. When we claimed him, he sure showed on his form and everything that he looked like he was a pretty decent kind of horse. And like, we go Prairie Meadows, and the owner thought, God darn, that'd be a good place to, you know, make some money with him. And, you know, then we claimed him, and then we found out he had little problems. You know, we had to do some surgery on him, and it was a year off. The owner more than gladly gave him off. He said, you do whatever you need to do with him. And, you know, we took our time, and he ran a real respectable first time as a three-year-old late last year. And he's just kind of gotten better and better every time we lead him over there.
It's really apparent, and you know, people may scoff in this era looking at buyers, but you could see in his buyer development. I mean, just from the 70s into 80s, and then you got to Prairie after the Keeneland meet and breaks his maiden. You gave him a little bit of a class relief in that spot, but then immediately against winners, he echoed what he had done, and then you were confident enough to run him in a graded spot like this against, you know, honest to goodness heavy heads.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I run him there at Keeneland, and Gary Stevens rode him for me the first time he ever been on him, and that day the colt just never even more or less picked up the bit. Gary said he was just kind of wandering around out there. He just didn't ever focus or anything that day. And he says, yeah, you got to try some blinkers on him, because he says this colt feels like he's got a lot of potential and everything. So when we got up here, we put some blinkers on him, and he's just been an absolute different horse.
Was there a discussion with Mr. Adams about trying the Cornhusker or looking for a, you know, a little easier spot?
Well, we had talked about it, but, you know, up here there was probably never going to be another spot to run him at, and we were at home, and he seemed like he really loved the racetrack and everything. I mean, his buyers, like you said, had just really climbed here, and you know, you got to take a shot once in a while. That kind of money, it's, you know, you just hope for the best, you know, and that's what turned out. It just, it really worked out great, and just can't appreciate and, you know, be more happy than the way it turned out.
Well, for you, and we'll start with you and Alex Berzer, and I, on Friday night, I couldn't help but just laud the win on Twitter, because I had to go back to Randy Morse and Jonesboro and Cliff Berry to kind of make a connection that, you know, the Cornhusker, you know, going back to its days at Exarban, it's really a mid-America kind of a race, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it's been around here in the Midwest for, you know, for years and years. It used to be, I mean, there in Exarban, it was one of the premier races in the country at the time. And, you know, there's been some great horses and that win the thing. And, you know, it's just been a pleasure. Just been a pleasure.
Well, we talked when Sugar Shock won the fantasy this year, your second graded stake win for Alex, his second, and of course he's won 3,200 races. You've had, you know, a group of, you know, moderate sized string for 20 years, and you win at a level clip year after year. You know, talk about your approach and remind everybody about your background around the game.
Well, I grew up around horses all my life. My dad and his grandpa, or his dad, they had horses when they were younger. And then my dad's got a cousin that was Irving Anderson. He was a big time jock in the years. And so we kind of grew up around there, and I don't know, I just kind of filtered back to the racetrack, and, you know, I learned some things from some great people, and it's just kind of carried on over, and we kind of take an approach that each horse is a little bit different, and we got to find where their niche is. And I've been blessed over here for the last few years, had great owners. They kind of let me do what I want to do and when I want to do it and stuff. And, it's just kind of carried through, and we've just been enjoying the success that we've had.
Well, Mr. Adams looked particularly just almost starstruck, it seemed, with the win. How long has he had horses?
Well, this is only his third horse. We had a little horse about 3 years ago with him, and we claimed him a little. Claimed a horse, and we did all right with him, and we kind of gave him some time off, and I'll be darned if he didn't have a accident in the paddock. You know, we turned him out, and so we had to, you know, retire him. And then we claimed a little cheap filly here a couple years ago that it just kind of paid, kind of had fun with him, and then he thought, well, we kind of maybe need to get a little bit more serious, and so he come up with all the money and everything, and he's like you said, he was really starstruck the other night. He just couldn't. He was lost for words.
Well, Alex, fold in Alex Berzer too, because he doesn't get enough exposure. He's a terrific, steady journeyman rider.
Oh, he is. I mean, you know, I've had a really good meet up here, and we've used him. Done it all the time here as much as what I can, and he's win about 80 or 90% of the races I've win here this year. And you know, he's a smart, patient rider that you know, you never hear him complain about things or anything. That you know, you get some older riders, well, they don't want to ride this horse, this and that, and it don't matter to him. He's done me a great job, and you know, I'm just proud for him, and just thrilled. You know, it's been a pleasure.
What are you thinking about next? Some people, they were making big plans on Twitter, Doug. They've got him in the Whitney next.
That I don't know. I mean, we haven't really even sat down and and looked at it yet. You know, we were just kind of waiting to see how the horse comes back, and which he did. He come back great, and I haven't talked to Mr. Adams, you know, since yesterday morning or anything like that. And he's, you know, he's more or less leave it up to me. You know, there's some options coming up. I don't know if we want to take on quite that big a heavy head yet, you know, but, I mean, there should be some spots around the country that we sure should fit in pretty good.
You would think so. And if you want any hints about winning a Whitney with a horse like this, call Jimmy Baker, and he'll talk to you about Mahogany Hall.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you can dream and everything. You can hope. I mean, we don't know for sure how good he really is. I know he went, you know, kind of drawing away a little bit the other night. I mean, we got floated wide and everything by the horse that runs second. And, you know, he took the action, and we just don't know yet how good he is. So, I mean, maybe this little step, and maybe we can find another one where we can get him, get his heart really, really built up, and then maybe we have to take on the heavy heads.
Well, yeah. Doug, just delighted for you, and for Mr. Adams, and for Alex, and for this nice son of Spring at Last. So continued success. Expect to talk to you again soon.
Thank you for everything. I mean, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and just keep up the good work. We enjoy listening to you and all the good information and everything that you bring to racing.
Well, too kind. Doug Anderson, everybody, and you can follow Doug. He's got the Facebook page, Doug Anderson Racing Stable, and pleasure to bring him on and give him the spotlight, because obviously he's done a great job. Patient, brought this horse back from a surgery, and look at him, great at stake win, the Cornhusker. This was a fun 3 hours. We got so much to do tomorrow. I got to get a visit in with McPeak, and we got Rick Violet, and oh my God, I want to reach Eddie Coletti and Kellen Gorder. A lot to do before we start looking ahead to the big summer action. I also didn't talk about the great Lady M, Marley's Freedom. Nice winner, Drayden Van Dyke for Baffert, and the parks, the two parks races, Amazon and the Dash. Got so much more to do tomorrow. Meanwhile, if you're going to play today, and you certainly, why not? We encourage it. There's a lot of great places today, actually. There's some good action. Delaware and Finger Lakes, Parks and Presque, Thistledown and Louisiana Downs, Arapahoe, Mountaineer. Want to thank Doug Anderson, and I want to thank Drew Mollica, Nicole Russo, Johnny D, Ben Colebrook, Jonathan Thomas. If you missed anything, replay tomorrow here, Sirius XM, 6 to 9. SteveBick.com for the archive and podcast and so forth. Back with you tomorrow. Good luck if you're playing, everybody. Thanks.
Racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Enjoy Daily Racing Form's best value with a multi-track PP pack. Get 5 full-card PPs featuring the day's best racing for only $6. Each DRF multi-track PP pack features full-card DRF pass performances for the top tracks you want to play. Handicapping articles and analysis, closer looks for key tracks, and selections by DRF handicappers. Daily packs and longer plans for all budgets are available. Download full-card PPs for 5 of today's top tracks. Visit drf.com/multi-track today.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.